Welcome once again to the Party of One podcast, the actual play RPG podcast where the gaming table is always set for two. I'm your host as always, Jeff Stormer, and this week on the show, I am joined by Aram Varshian for a game of Ironsworn. Party people, this is the second half of our two-part season premiere crossover with our friends at Kill Every Monster. Kill Every Monster is an interview discussion actual play hybrid show where every episode, Aram and Dylan sit down with a guest and talk through the lore of a monster, its history, how it's portrayed in the game Dungeons & Dragons, and how players can present it in a new way at the table. And then in the second half of a given episode, there is a cinematic actual play experience where you explore and experience a new form of this monster in play. To recreate that experience on Party of One, we have done two episodes, the first of which you can hear on the feed right now, which is Dylan and I run through a game of Caro Assertion's Exquisite Biome, where we create some horrific wizard-born monstrosities. In this episode, I subject Aram to those in an actual play experience in one of my favorite games in the world, Ironsworn. Ironsworn is, of course, a role-playing game of perilous quests for solo, co-op, or guided play. It is legitimately, like, my go-to fantasy role-playing game. It mechanically does some very interesting things. Narratively, it takes this cool sort of Witcher-esque setting that I think is really dope. And also, you can check it out for free at ironswornrpg.com. It's a great game. I love it a lot, and I can't recommend it enough. It was the natural fit to run Aram through some horrifying monster encounters. As a reminder, in a serendipitous twist of fate, you can hear me on the Kill Every Monster podcast right now talking about the weird world of Modrons that are sort of sentient living shapes from the plane of lawful existence. I've got a lot of opinions on them, and also we do a weird actual play. It's very fun. You should go listen to that right now. You can find a link to that in the show notes. But first, a note that this episode is sponsored by Multitude Productions and their actual play podcast, Join the Party, as part of their direct creator support initiative. The actual play community is full of incredible creators telling some of the most imaginative stories in all of entertainment, and as fans of the art form, Multitude want to keep finding new ways to support AP creators and their audiences. And to get an idea of some of the amazing work that's being done in the actual play space, look no further than Join the Party. Join the Party is an AP podcast focused on genre-pushing storytelling and celebrating the artistry of its cast and collaborators, and just being a love letter to the medium in general. Their current campaign, they're playing Masks, which is all about teenagers dealing with the drama of superhero high school. If you know me, you know that I love Masks a whole lot, and so that is extremely up my alley. And if you're a fan of actual play storytelling, you should absolutely go check it out and see if they become your actual favorite, well, maybe your second favorite actual play podcast. Check out Multitude and join the party at jointhepartypod.com or connect with them at jointhepartypod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Tumblr, Facebook, or Twitter, and be sure to let them know that Party of One sent you so that they know that their direct creator support initiative is working. And with all of that said, let's go ahead and throw it over to me in the past so that he can get started with the show. Take it past me. Thanks, future me. I am beyond excited. This is an episode that I have been looking forward to for a very long time. I am sitting down with my good friend Aram Varshian. Aram, thank you so much for coming on Party of One.
Jeff, it is good to be here. Thank you for having me back again.
I am so thrilled to have you back on the show, especially for this episode. As our listeners know, I recorded this game with Dylan. We made up an adventure that I re-listened to today to get ready for this recording and spent the whole time going, oh, this is great. We're going to put Aram through hell. Yeah. And I'm so excited to do exactly that.
I'm eager to hear that. I have a general idea of what Dylan said, just because I know Dylan. So I'm looking forward to it.
This is going to be so much fun. Before we dive in, though, why don't you take a moment and let our lovely listeners at home know about anything you've got going on that you might want them to know about?
Sure. So I am the co-producer of Kill Every Monster. I'm the creator of God's Fall. And recently, my friend Dylan and I, who you were just mentioning, have formed a media production company called Dead Ghost Productions. And the first, it's basically to kind of like keep all the shows under one umbrella, but also it's a production house so we can start making shorter 4 to 8 episode series where we pick a new system, a new cast, a new GM, and run them through a highly edited production. And the first game we have chosen is Die RPG. And you can hear our show replay in October.
That's so sick. I got to watch the cast reveal trailer for Die and I, or for Replay, and I spent the whole time like holding back a scream because I did not want to alarm my wife. It looks so sick, and I'm so excited to see what else y'all come up with, because you are both talented storytellers that I trust innately, and I want to see what else. I want to see the amazing things that you do in that confined four to eight episode space, because I think that that is something with a lot of real potential. Like, there's something really beautiful and cinematic in that space that I want to see more people play around in.
Yeah, it lets you hit one big story arc,
yeah,
one big conclusion that's really satisfying, and Die RPG is built specifically with their rituals arc to hit 4 to 6 episodes, so it's exactly what we need. It's the perfect game to launch, and it's also the perfect game to be like the kind of counterculture D&D that Dylan and I do. This fits in well.
It really does. When I heard that you were doing it, I was like, well, yeah, obviously. Like, obviously they were going to do that. What other outcome could there possibly be?
Yeah.
I'm so excited about that. I'm also excited to play today's game, because this is one that we've been cooking up for a while. We are playing Iron Sworn, which, as I said to you right before we hopped on mic, this is my countercultural D&D. Like, this is, in terms of being the game that my brain goes, I could just play X. Like, this Ironsworn is that for me. It is a game of perilous quests. It is a game we featured before on the show. And the reason that we are playing this specifically is because I sat down with Dylan separately, and we played Exquisite Biome to create a weird fantasy landscape and adventure. And I'm excited to put you through some nightmarish things today.
Excellent.
So, why don't you, at the top of our story, introduce us to your character, talk a little bit about their background, what they're looking for in the world, and then I will set them up with a particularly challenging scenario.
So I'm going to go, there's a name that I use. There's a fantasy name that I use that ties back to Armenia when I can't think of a new name. So I'm going with my standard one of Vishakapar. It means dragon in Armenian, and he just goes, and his friends just call him, well, if he had friends, his friends would call him Visha. He is a loner. He doesn't like people. People don't like him. He's a workaholic because he wants to earn money so he can get away from people and not have to work anymore and live in the woods and hang out with his ravens.
Goals. As the kids say,
simple goals,
big mood.
Yeah, you know what? It really, it's not even that hard. He just wants to live in a cabin with some ravens. Like, I mean, you know, nowadays it'd be really hard. Back then, probably not that hard.
There's woodland cabins with ravens all over the goddamn place. So Visha has taken a job, and we are going to play out a little bit of like the story around that job before you get to where the job is happening.
Okay.
I also have to come up with a name that I have not done until this moment. I just realized you have been hired to retrieve the spell book of Dr. Carpanian Dorm. Dr. Dorm is a magical wizard. He was a magical engineer, very specifically. The details that you know, Dorm was a wizard. He experimented with the art of scrying, the art of divination, and saw something terrible in the future, a gigantic blast of eldritch energy the world has never seen before. He set about to stop that. Rather than accept the inevitable, he set out to change the inevitable, and he set out to stop this by building a wizard's tower as magical conduit battery. And the most terrifying part of this is that he was successful. His tower was a success. Until it wasn't. Something occurred. There was a meltdown. That power, that energy released, like began, like released into the world. There was a blast. No one quite knows the full details of what happened, but something triggered a blast. There is a blast zone, and somewhere in that blast zone, somewhere in or near the remnants of that tower, there is a spell book. You have been hired by Ashton Blix. Ashton Blix is a...
Never trusted that guy, but his gold coin is good.
Ashton is a information dealer. He is a bit of a renowned for being a bit of a you know what, your phrase of a phrasing of like his coin is good, but you don't trust him is a pretty accurate assessment of Ashton. Yeah. Ashton is an acquirer of things, an acquirer of secrets, and generally speaking, good things do not necessarily come about when he acquires something.
No, if he says there'll be 200 gold at the end mm-hmm. of the mission and it's going to take X amount of days, those things are usually true.
Yeah.
100%. Everything else is a little vague and always goes a little sideways, but he always pays up.
He always pays up. He is remarkably good at if you walk in the door, if you live long enough to request a payment, you get payment prompt. And usually he is a pretty good tipper.
Yeah.
Because he's impressed that you survive.
Yeah, I mean, part of his logic has got to be like, if they don't come back, the job might have gotten done anyway. But if they do come back, I know I can rely on them. So exactly. I might as well pay him well.
He is known for having very good relationships with like the people that he hands out jobs to.
He's like the closest thing Visha has to an actual friend.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
And so you have taken this job. He has requested this of you. And what I want you to do at the very start of this, like you have your long-term vow, but as you have taken this job, I want you to swear an iron vow. Swearing upon a piece of iron, iron being a thing that is powerful in the world of Ironsworn. It is the thing that fights back the Fae. It is a material that has like a weight to it. Swearing a job upon an iron vow is like the truest form of like committing to something that you can do.
Okay.
So I want you, and this is going to be our first roll of the game, and this is when we're going to walk through like how this works. I have two 10-sided dice in front of me. I'm going to roll these dice, and that is going to be your challenge. That is going to be the challenge dice that you have to beat for this action.
Okay.
You're going to roll 1d6. You're going to add one of your five stats. In this case, your heart. You're going to add your heart to your d6 roll. That is going to give you your action score. We're going to compare that to the challenge dice, and that's going to tell us if you get a strong hit, which is that your action score is higher than both challenge dice, a weak hit, which is higher than one challenge dice, or a miss, which is lower than both. Okay. In this case, I will also give you an additional +1. I'm going to say that you have a bond with Ashton just because he is the closest thing you have in this world to a friend.
Kind. Okay.
So I've rolled my 2d10. Your challenge dice for this action, I'm debating whether or not I always tell you. I probably will, but you've got a 3 and a 6.
Okay. That is doable. I have a heart of 1.
Mm-hmm.
I have another 1, so that's 2. Mm-hmm. And then I'm rolling a d6, which is 6. So that's a total of 8.
That is an 8. That is a strong hit. You are emboldened, and it is clear what you must do next. Take +2 momentum. Your momentum starts at +2. This is a resource that represents how in control of the situation you are. You have a maximum of 10 momentum at any time, and you can burn that momentum to replace your dice roll at any time with your momentum score. So if you roll especially badly and you've got enough momentum, surprise, you actually rolled in it. Your score is actually an 8.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
So luckily, it's pretty clear. I mean, it's clear what you must do. You know the location of the quantum conduit pretty well. It is a magical, I mean, it's where shit went wrong. Like, it's a pretty known location. You know that it is not necessarily unsafe to travel there, but you also know that, well, generally if Ashton is reaching out to you and offering you the amount of money that he is offering,
yeah,
you know that you're not the first person to make this trip.
No, he never calls me first because he is cheap.
Yeah.
He'll try and get a bargain, but then he's like, oh, fine. He's got to get the job done. And there's only a couple people he knows that can do them. And this is my specialty.
Exactly. You know that it's going to be about a three-day trip out. Like, Dorm very consciously built the quantum conduit out in the middle of nowhere, like in a place where, in part because he foresaw this, a disastrous thing happening. He built the conduit in a place where there was nothing. It's a pretty like isolated gentle plains area that's like pretty easy to locate, but getting there is going to take a few days. It's going to take a little bit of a journey. Is there anything you are in the settlement of Caldress? It is a bustling fantasy city. If there is anything you would like to do in terms of gathering information or securing advantages, you can do that now, or we can undertake the journey to get you to the conduit itself.
There's no point in him talking to people.
Sure.
He never gets anywhere and he doesn't trust him anyway, but he knows which raven he wants to bring, because they all have their own little quirks and their own little skill sets. But Doug is really good out in the wild on his own, away from the flock. Mm-hmm. But Doug's a little particular. He likes to be wooed. So I'm down in the fish market looking for a really nice package of sardines that I can bring back and entice Doug to come with me.
You know Doug's favorite brand of sardine, and
from the, one fisherman, only yeah, one
there's
guy.
One fisherman that has it. And frankly, this probably isn't the first time that you've goaded Doug into this, and this one fisherman knows that. It takes the last bit of coin that you've like got on your person to get this tin of yeah. sardines.
He's not for a commercial Doug. Fisherman. He's just some guy, but Doug kept landing on his boats because he would get the best sardines and the guy would just shoo him away angrily. So when I come to him, this is a hassle. This is not his business. I'm bothering him. And he's like, fine, 20 gold here.
So
this guy's more of a dick than I am.
So you open the tin, Doug comes down, snatches some. You've got to wait a little while for Doug to snatch one or two of these sardines. But eventually, like, he settles on your shoulder and kind of like points you in the direction of the conduit site, and yeah. the two of you are on your way.
Doug's doing his little beak taps, brushing against my side. I'm rubbing him underneath his chin. It takes him a while to warm up, but once he's in, he's in.
So the two of you embark on your way to the conduit, and this is a journey. And the way that journeys work is this is a mechanical thing that we're going to run through.
Okay.
A lot of Ironsworn runs off of progress tracks. They are like 10 box tracks that you fill in a certain number of boxes or ticks at a time that tells you how far along a given task you are. A journey is exactly that. We have a track of 10 boxes here. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, and 10. And this being a fairly easy journey, I'm going to say that this is a troublesome journey, which means every time you are successful, I'm going to fill in 3 of these boxes. When you reach your destination, I will have you roll a progress move, which is a little bit of a different move, and we'll talk through what that looks like when we get there.
Okay.
So you embark on your journey. The first segment of your journey, I'm going to have you roll plus wits, and then I'm going to roll my 2d10. Okay. It's a lot of like the early part of the journey is a lot of marching through, or a lot of like navigating through like normal terrain, wilder, you know, woods, roads. Like the first part of the journey is kind of the easiest part, and especially because I rolled a 1 and a 4. So it's a little, this is the area where it's easy to navigate.
Yeah. Okay. Then I definitely should have taken a hawk. It would have made more sense, but now that I look at the stats. Okay, so I just roll my die 6 plus my wits, which are 2.
Correct.
So that is going to be 3 plus 2 is 5.
That is a strong hit. You reach a waypoint. You are able to like navigate. There is actually like a cliffside, and it is on this cliffside that you kind of start to see the changes of the landscape, right? Like you're looking out, you can kind of see plains below. You're making your way down. I am going to check 3 of these progress boxes. The first thing that you notice is that everything is pointed towards you.
Okay.
Everything seems to be tilted at like a 45. Nothing is pulled out of the ground. Like the plants are still there, but even this far out, everything seems pointed towards your location, or more accurately, away from the site of the blast.
Okay, so it's not like it's tracking me. They're just kind of blown outwards.
Everything appears to have been blown outwards so strongly that it just, in an instant, reformed its direction in place.
Well, concerning. However, eliminates a lot of threats.
Give me your next give me another wits roll for the next leg of your journey as you kind of start to navigate. Now you're feeling also the other thing that you're feeling as I roll this. It's a one and a five. So the other thing that you're feeling as you navigate this is wind is blowing on your face no matter where you stand, no matter where you go. Like you can hide behind a tree. You can duck, you can duck under grass. It always feels like there is wind directly in your face.
So Doug usually hops from tree to tree and flies along and follows me, but the wind picked up a little bit and Doug doesn't like that. So Doug is now nestled inside my coat with just his little beak popping out and clacking away. So I'm going to roll my D6 plus two, and that is going to be again, 3 plus 2 is 5.
So that is a weak hit. Take minus one supply. I think that like now the journey is getting challenging, right? Like you've kind of had to set up camp overnight because you're dealing with like landscapes that don't quite make sense. This wind is constant to the point where it's kind of irritating your skin and you periodically got to like duck into a tent just to rub water on your face. Like it is starting to get harsh out here.
Yeah, we have to take cover more often. It's hard to light a fire. I've had to use these little gnome bricks, that are these little self-lighting gnome bricks. You just toss them in with a few drops of water and boom, fire. Very dangerous to carry. You have to keep them carefully wrapped up. And because if they get a single drop of water, your whole backpack goes up.
Yep.
But
yep,
they're helpful. Yep.
And now make me one final wits roll for the final leg of the journey as the landscape very much starts to change around you. That is somehow another 1 and 5, but the opposite dice rolling 1 and 5.
Okay.
So those are the numbers that you got to beat. Give me one final wits roll
that
to see how you do.
6 plus 2 is 8.
That is, you make it flawlessly. You get to the heart of you get to the heart of the site where the conduit was at its peak, or where it the general area, right? Because now the landscape has fully shifted. The thing that you notice most specifically is the trees. Everything is still at that 45 degree angle, but the trees are crystalline. They look like every single plant, tree, rock, anything. It's not like diamond crystal. It's like you blasted a tree with an overwhelming amount of liquid nitrogen. So it's got that like crystalline thing, but it also looks brittle. It looks jagged. It looks a little bit like rotted from the inside, but it's got that sort of semi-crystalline quality to everything.
This is such a Dylan thing. Dylan is a very smart scientist who loves to write scientists into his games as incompetent or malicious entities exclusively.
That makes me real. Like, you know what? You're not wrong. So everything has seemingly been blasted with this magical sense of liquid nitrogen. And now I'm going to have you, as you arrive at your destination. Oh, I'm going to, what's going to happen is now I'm going to roll 2d10.
Okay.
You have a progress of 9, which means that your action result for this roll is automatically a 9. And you're going to compare it to the two die results that I just rolled, which is our 6 and a 4, which means that you have arrived at a destination and it favors you. You can take +1 on your next move, or you can take 1 momentum.
Should I have been adding to my momentum?
You have a momentum of 4 right now.
I will take 1 more momentum to make it 5.
All right. You have arrived. And the thing that you see, the thing that Visha sees, that alarms you. Well, you had heard, all of the stories that the conduit had exploded makes the fact that you're staring at a big giant wizard's tower off like that. You can see the silhouette of it, like just off in the distance in like a clearing, more than a little alarming.
So it's fine. The tower's fine.
The tower it's standing. It's hard to tell if it's fine just yet.
Sure.
But the other thing that I will tell you as you arrive and you start to navigate the forest is you see these crystalline trees. The thing that you notice is that it's not quite that the trees look the same across the board. As you kind of navigate, you notice two main differences. You notice, some of the trees are inky, opaque. They look Think about like, you know, like a mother of pearl, like it has that like that layer on the inside where it's got that kind of like thick opaqueness to it.
Yeah.
Some of the trees look like that and the others look vibrant. They look like they all have this sort of semi-translucent quality, but some of them look almost filled all the way through and some of them look bursting on the inside like they are almost full of a jelly. Like they look like they are glowing on the inside. The other thing that you notice is that at least one of the trees has a dead mercenary laying at the foot of it.
Bad. Deal with that in a moment. I'm going to pick one of these super glowy to bursting trees, and at a distance, I'm going to lock an arrow, take aim at the core of the trunk, whichever it looks most juicy.
Love it.
And launch an arrow into it to see what happens.
A great scientific experiment.
Yeah, this is science. Dylan would agree.
First, I'm going to have you roll. I think because you're laying low and taking aim, I think this is a good opportunity to use one of your assets. Assets are unique character abilities. Roll me to secure an advantage. This is going to be plus your edge, which is your ability, your agility, your quickness, your aim and precision.
Which is my best stat as three.
So you're going to roll me plus edge and then plus one additional to that.
Okay, so I'm rolling a D6 plus 4.
Oh no. Yep, that's what you're rolling.
That is going to be a 5. So 5 plus 4 is 9.
All right, that's a weak hit.
Ooh.
That was an 8 and a 9. That's a weak hit. So on a hit, you're going to take an additional plus 1 momentum, so that takes you to plus 6.
Okay.
And you have a weak hit on secure advantage, which gives you an additional momentum. So you are at 7 momentum, which is a great place to be.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have you roll me a strike. So the roll me plus edge, you're attacking at range.
Okay. So I'm attacking it. So I roll you D6 plus my edge.
Yes.
And no bonuses for the archer.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. That is a 6 plus 3 is 9.
That is flawless. What happens? This works flawlessly. And what happens here? You strike faster than the tentacle root can grab the arrow.
That's not what trees have. I know trees.
The arrow flies at the tree. What you see is sort of a tendril, like it's almost a tree root. It's almost the sort of crystalline tree root, but it's also this tendrilous kind of like spider limb a little bit, like kind of like leaps up to grab it, to snatch it. But you lined up, you were too precise, strikes it, like strike straight through the tree. And there is a burst of light and energy and crackling erupts from all sides as that like glowing sense in the middle, like all drains out as crackling energy bursts out from this tree. And eventually this like gnashing limb goes limp and just like falls over as you have struck the thing hiding in this tree.
I turn to Doug. Doug, do not land on branches, only my shoulders, as long as we are out here. And I give him another sardine.
Caw.
Good. Doug's a very American raven.
Very sensible. I get sensible energy from this raven.
Absolutely. Doug is a very sensible raven. He's not overly curious like the others. That's why I brought him along.
So you have struck one of these creatures out of these trees. You look around and you notice there are many more of these trees. You are able to spot the ones that have this glowing sense in them. That there
when
is
you say
a
I am, yeah. When you say I have struck a creature out of these trees, that is not how I am interpreting these events. I'm interpreting these events as I have struck some sort of liquid infection or concentrated magic that is animated these things is now drained out. Is there any sense I'm getting that this was a person?
There is a sense that you are able to, between you and Doug, you are able to kind of like, even from a distance, study this tree a little bit and notice that the limb, the root, the sort of tendrilous root thing, doesn't quite match the actual tree. Like you're able to kind of like after you've killed it, you're able to get close enough to notice like it is fleshy. It's got an exoskeleton, kind of like an insectoid exoskeleton, but it is fleshy. It's not like the bark of this tree, which is crystalline and brittle and prone to crack and shatter. And as you look closely, you notice there are cracks in the tree itself, as though this limb broke out from inside of the tree. It appears that something has hollowed out this tree to live in it and take it, and has started snatching things with this tendril.
Okay. So the first question is there a clear path to the tower where I don't have to get too close to the trees? Or are we just killing trees the whole way in? Am I making a spear and we're just going to start, you know, like it's zombies?
If you are careful and graceful, and as you notice, like you look over, you see this mercenary, presumably one of the other ones that Ashton has hired.
Sure.
You notice it's hard to explain what it looks like when someone's natural magical essence, like the magic of their soul, has specifically been drained out of their corpse.
Right. Okay.
But it's pretty clearly apparent when Visha sees it, it's pretty clearly apparent that this person died and had the magic of their soul drained out of them.
Right. That is bad.
And you also notice around their ankle, a root, like a fleshy root or a fleshy insectoid root, has tangled their ankle and pulled them into the base of this tree.
Do I know this other mercenary?
You know what? Give me a gather information roll.
Okay.
This is going to be plus wits.
All right. That is two. Two plus one is three. I'm not a people person.
That's a weak hit. No. You've got plus one momentum, bringing your momentum to eight, but it does complicate your quest or introduce a new danger. This is Red Eye Jones.
Old Red Eye.
Red Eye Jones is remarkable in your circles for being like a tremendous hunter of magical items. You know what I mean? Like, he is Ashton's best client, is another way to put it. If there's something magical, navigating a magical environment and retrieving an item, Red Eye Jones is your hunter.
Okay.
Which means that magically speaking, this is not any kind of magic that Red Eye was prepared for.
Doesn't mean he didn't find what he was looking for, though.
This is also true.
I am going to notch another arrow. I'm going to tell Doug to hop out and stay behind, or actually, hop out and fly above and keep his eyes open and call out if he sees anything weirder than what we're already dealing with. I'm going to pull that arrow back far, and I'm going to get down low and walk with knees bent slowly towards Red Eye and the tree. And I'm looking at the tree, and he's talking quietly to the tree. I don't know if you can hear me. I don't know if you can hear me, if you could understand me. However, I mean, you're no harm, but you have seen I can kill you. I just want my friend's body, and I will leave you be. And I will just quietly repeat that as I walk up with the arrow drawn, and when I'm close enough, grab his leg and drag him back.
To decide what I want this to. I think that this is probably a compel. You are communicating. This is a living entity. You are communicating with it. This is. Would you say that you are more threatening or more like pacifying or convincing?
You're definitely threatening.
All right, then you're gonna roll me plus iron here.
Okay.
And I'm going to roll my challenge dice.
And that's going to be a 6 plus 2 is 8.
That's a 1 and a 10, so that is a weak hit.
Okay.
And I think that what happens, they do what you want, but they ask something in return, and I think what that's going to look like.
The rest of the sardines.
You know what? That's actually really funny and clever, and I'm going to have you mark one. Drop one supply as you throw the rest of the sardines. It snatches the tin And you see, like, in an instant, there is a flash of that same kind of, like, life magic. Even though the sardines are dead, there is still, like, the magic of life in them. And you see them become withered and decrepit and petrified almost as this limb kind of snatches it, drains that magic, and retreats back. And you drag off Red Eye's body.
All right. Sorry, Doug. I get you more wig at home, buddy. So I drag him back. And first I want to just, like, look him over to see if, like, he's infectious before I start rummaging around.
No infection, just, like, a clean mark of entry, like punctured in the neck, like kind of mosquito style, like punctured in the neck.
Okay.
But not infectious in any way.
All right. Then does he have a pack on him or a bag or anything like that?
He does. You can take plus one supply as you kind of grab some basic survival gear from it.
But does he have a book?
No book.
Does he have a journal? Has he made any notes? Has anything?
Give me a gather information plus wits.
Okay. Plus wits. That's a plus two.
Because he definitely has notes, but I don't know. I don't know if there's anything of value in them.
Rolled a six plus two is eight. This guy's lucky.
This guy has got it. That is two momentum, which brings you up to a nine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Correct.
Great. You are at nine momentum. And the notes is... nothing on the trees, nothing on the tree insect things, but there is a sketch in one of these trees or in one of these notes. Like, there is a sketch. It's of what appears to be a mix of a gerbil and an anteater.
Okay.
With what gigantic face of an anteater, kind of like the pudgy round body of a gerbil.
Is it proportionate? Because that poor thing. It's got to be some
almost like triceratops limbs. So it's got that kind of like round thing, but like kind of stocky, like four stocky limbs.
Yeah.
And two massive. Imagine like the tusks of a woolly mammoth if they were antlers. So they're kind of like up and they're just big fuck off tusk antlers.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's just
these creatures have been chimered is what it seems like.
There are notes underneath it that say, underlined question, how many? Question mark. And then a statement underneath in parentheses, in the trees.
Oh, so
and at that moment, you hear like a, you know, those opaque trees that were right, that you've been around and have been kind of safer. You hear a distinct scraping coming from one of them.
Okay. And I'm like, okay, is Doug still in the air?
Doug is still in the air.
Okay. I'm going to whistle to Doug. And the whistle means stay in the air. Don't land.
Okay.
And then I'm going to try. Sorry. And then I was going to, you know, I've got my bow out and I was just going to try and slink back into the shadows.
I think, especially with Doug in the air, let me look at your Raven asset for a
Doug
moment.
Gives me a little shadow bonus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Take, give me secure advantage plus shadow plus one for having Doug. So that's going to be plus two, and this is securing an advantage to stay fully hidden.
All right. That is only two, so two plus two is four.
Well, I will say this, because you have an option here.
Right.
That was a seven and an eight, which means that is a miss, but you also have nine momentum, which means that you could turn this into a strong hit if you want. 100%
I am. Here's what happens. Great. I back up. I'm not good at this. I have a one in shadow. I back up and I back up under one of the trees and directly above me is one of these creatures just clacking along, getting ready just to drop right. I'm in the worst place possible.
And so what you're hearing specifically is like you look up and you see specifically true to Red Eye's notes cracking through this crystalline tree. And you notice this is one of the like thick, opaque ones. Cracking through the edge is like one of these like tusks. It's much smaller. This one appears to be kind of like a little bit kind of the size of like a guinea pig. So like larger than a gerbil, like about the size of like a chubby little guinea pig kind of bursts through and starts to like walk along a branch
just before it gets the drop on me because I just don't see it. My focus is way out here and there's so much going on that I don't catch it. You just hear this loud caw, caw, as Doug swoops in to alert me that this thing is above, and I just track right to it with my bow as it's coming out.
And you, are you firing at this thing?
Absolutely, I'm firing at this thing.
Yeah, you pick this thing off immediately. It is this one's pretty small. you notice, like, what you hear is several more points of scraping from the inside of this tree.
Yeah.
It appears there are a lot more than just one of these burrowing things taking root inside these hollowed out trees. And then you hear kind of the screech. And you realize, oh no, I think that there is a larger one of these things making its way towards your current location.
I am going to run. Great. I'm going to whistle for Doug to follow, and I am going to run.
This is a face danger roll because you are actively in danger.
Yep.
And what that is, this is edge because you are just running at full speed. So give me an edge roll here.
Okay. I would drop my momentum down to 2 again, right?
Up to 3 because you scored a hit on your, because you scored a hit with Doug, that means you take plus 1 momentum.
Okay, perfect. And I'm sorry, I'm rolling what again?
Plus edge.
Plus edge, perfect. So that is plus 3, and I rolled a 5. So 5 plus 3 is 8.
And I rolled a 3 and a 10, so that is a weak hit. I'm sprinting
towards the tower, by the way, just so that's clear.
I think that you are enduring some stress here. This is pretty scary, especially as you see that this thing is about the size of a bull, and it is a giant bull-sized gerbil anteater with tusk horns, and it is bursting towards this tree. Drop your spirit by 1 and then roll me plus spirit, which is plus 4 at the moment.
Right. Okay. 4 plus 4 is 8.
That is a strong hit. You can choose to shake this off, which is you can bring yourself back to 5 spirit in exchange for plus 1 or in exchange for losing 1 momentum, bringing you down to 2, or you can embrace the darkness and take plus 1 momentum.
I think he'll embrace it.
Okay.
He doesn't. This is the situation he's in. His mindset is to adapt and move forward. Mm-hmm. So momentum seems like the logical choice here.
So you start running, and as you are running, this thing is running behind you. It smashes. You see it smash into one of these trees. Its tusk, when you sneak past it, it doesn't immediately notice you. It does run headlong into one of these hollowed out trees with the bug in it, like the glowing ones, smash its tusk through it, and rip out a gigantic cylindrical bug the size of this entire tree, and just start thrashing around with it as other tentacles start lashing at this tree. These are natural enemies.
Ah, well, I will get out of their way and let them fight.
And so you make your way, and you're in a clearing. You are seeing everything is turning away from the site of this conduit. Everything is blasted with this energy. And you come to the base of this tower. And as you approach, you notice like this tower is built immaculately. It is like the tower itself looks almost pristine. Shocking for age as being a decrepit old wizard's tower, and also because it was supposedly the site of a massive disaster, and the signs of that disaster are left, right, and center. And then as you get closer, that's when you notice something. This tower, the walls of it, shine with a sort of crystalline thing as though the tower itself was also blasted with this energy.
Ah.
And as you get closer, as you are a sprint and a run away, that is when you finally, like, that is when clouds cover, like, you finally can fully see the tower, like, away from the sun. And you see that the tower is itself shining with this sort of purple-blue glowing-ish energy in the middle of it.
Okay. All right. It's very Lovecraftian all of a sudden. All right.
And you realize as you kind of look at the tower, you look at the tree, you look at the tower, you look at the tree. Oh, they're glowing with the exact same shade of purple blue energy in the middle of them.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Then we are going to stop running. I'm assuming I'm not being chased anymore.
That is correct. That is correct.
Yeah, we are going to stop running, hunch back down, take this slowly, creep up to the tower, try and stay out of view.
That is going to be securing an advantage. This is, again, securing an advantage with Shadow. I think that Doug is flying overhead, so I'll give you another plus 1.
Thank you.
So that is, and
3 plus 2 is 5.
That's a strong hit. That is, so a strong hit on a on an advantage gives you, what does that give you? You can choose to take control and make another move now and add plus 1 or take 2 momentum.
Since my momentum's low, I'll take 2 momentum.
Okay. You are laying low. You see this thing, and what you notice is you have some time to study this thing. I'll have you roll like a gather information for any additional details that you get, but the thing that you notice immediately as you're looking at these trees with these sort of like magic-sucking weird bugs in them, and you're looking at this tower that has something inside of it that seems pretty similar, you notice that the like clouds in the air and things are like, as opposed to everything else around you that is pointed away from it, you kind of notice that like the clouds themselves and the sky and what appears to almost be like the sunlight, why it's kind of initially hard to get a good look at it, appears to be floating towards this tower.
Hmm. Like it's sucking in the clouds?
Like it's sucking in the clouds and the sun and... Give me a gather information.
Okay, that's wits, right?
Yeah.
3 plus 2 is 5.
That is an 8 and a 9, which is good because that means that your investigation unearths a dire threat or reveals an unwelcome truth, and I'm going to have you take 2 more stress harm. You realize you kind
Where
of
look am I
back.
Stress? I'm sorry.
Your stress is now at +4, +3, +2. You're at +2 stress.
Where
you're taking
is
two stress
that?
Damage.
Why am I not seeing? So it, does it come off my health?
Is oh,
that
your
what
spirit.
You're saying?
Sorry. Your enduring stress means your spirit is dropping down to 2.
Understood. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
And you have a realization. You look back. You see the body of Red Eye in the background. You see those sardines. They've had the magic drained out of them. If one of these bugs is the size of a tree, it feeds on the magic of people, animals, plants. What happens if one of these bugs is the size of a wizard's tower?
Right.
What magic is that thing going to be feeding on?
Whatever caused this. Or maybe the book itself, but more than likely whatever caused this.
Mm-hmm. And that means that that this bug, this magic feasting thing, latched onto this conduit, latched onto this incredible power source, and has been feasting on the greatest supply of energy that the world has ever known.
Yeah, this is a kaiju.
It's a kaiju. This is turned into a kaiju.
Okay, here's the plan.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm going to go back. Did you say there was a flashback mechanic for this, or some kind of like?
We can play fast and loose with things.
All right. This is one of the reasons he picked Doug.
Yeah.
Each of his ravens, he trains to look for something. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a coin raven and there's like a scroll raven. There's a wand raven. Doug's the book raven.
Yeah. Okay? Right. Sure.
So the plan is I'm going to go in there, distract this thing and try and draw it away from the tower so
great.
Doug can get in there and get the book.
That's great. That's fantastic. okay. I think that Doug flies down, gives you like a solemn nod. Ta-caw.
Thumbs up. Good job, and Doug.
He takes off. How are you going to distract a gigantic, like hollowed out tree bug that is the size of an entire wizard's tower?
I'm going to do what I do with everything I try and distract. I am going to line up a shot and I am going to shoot it.
Fan-fucking-tastic. I genuinely wasn't quite sure what the answer was going to be, and I'm so delighted that that is what it is.
In fact, I'm going to get, like, if I can get 10 feet up, maybe 5 feet up into a, you know, 5 or 8, you know, 5, to, high enough in a tree to get a cleaner shot, not so high that I can't jump down and run.
Yeah. This is absolutely securing an advantage by aiming. Do you want to trust your instincts and roll plus wit, or line up your shot and roll plus edge?
I want to line up my shot and roll plus edge.
Okay.
That is a 4 plus 3 is 7.
That is a weak hit, which means you're taking 1 momentum for being an archer.
Right.
And when you secure an advantage on a weak hit, you're going to take an additional momentum, so that's 2 momentum that you're adding to your total, which I think puts you up to another 8.
Eight.
Fantastic. Your arrow lodges directly into the stone, the sort of crystalline ruined stone of the tower that was the conduit. And there's a moment of complete silence. And then it cracks. And then there's the explosion. The tower is torn to shreds. This gigantic, tendrilous, tube-like creature, kind of like a man-o-war or like a gigantic tube-like bug that has filled this entire magical tower battery, bursts forth, surrounded just by like bursts and swirls of raw eldritch magical energy, the kind that even if you were a formidable hunter of magical items would not be something that you would see. It is not a magic of this realm, of this plane of existence.
Okay.
And it is thrashing about as it has been attacked.
At that moment,
another thing occurs.
Okay.
You hear that explosion, and then you hear six more explosions immediately, and the screech of this horned creature.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. My very first thought was, I'm going to jump out of this tree, yell, just to make sure this thing sees me, and then I'm going to sprint back towards where the anteater gerbil tusks are.
This is facing a danger plus edge because you are facing two fairly gigantic creatures.
Yeah.
That's a 6 and a 10.
Okay, that is going to be, I rolled a 4 plus 3 is 7.
So that you can take a weak hit or you can, well, it's a 6 and a 10,
I gotta take a weak hit no matter what.
Yeah, your momentum's not gonna necessarily, I'm gonna have you endure harm here.
Okay.
So your health drops down by 1.
Right.
And roll me plus your health because that is higher than your iron.
Okay. That is going to be 4 plus 4 is 8.
Okay. Same deal as last time. Do you want to drop down a momentum to gain that health back or take plus 1 momentum?
I will take plus 1 momentum.
Plus 9.
Always going forward.
You run. You get smashed aside by this... have a name for this creature and I forgot it now. By the horn burrower. The horn burrower, this gigantic, the size of a Tyrannosaurus anteater thing.
It doesn't hit me. Okay. I'm running straight towards it.
Yep.
And I have to, and at the very last minute, just as that thing is going to crush me with those horns and end me, I drop and slide. I get all scraped up on the gravel.
Flawless.
As I go under its legs.
And it rushes and you hear trees explode. As the horn burrowers young, thousands of them explode out of these trees, and you see like a stampede of these anteater things. Some of them are getting snatched up by the haunts in the trees. Some of them are getting snatched up by these tentacles. Masses of them, alongside this triceratops sized thing, are running at this kaiju. There is a chaotic battle unfolding here. Chaos has emerged.
I am going to circumvent that chaos and make my way back to the tower.
Fantastic. This is going to be another face danger. And I think this is probably still edge, maybe wits. Do you think edge or wits? Probably edge.
Yeah, edge, I'm moving quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would say.
Right.
Yeah.
That feels right. That feels right.
That is a 6 plus 3 is 9.
That is a strong hit. You get exactly what you want. Your momentum is all the way up to a plus 10. You make your way. You flawlessly navigate this horrible stampede. And you...
I'm not even that clever about it. I just make an arc and I sprint. I am a runner and I just like, I don't worry about trying to fool anyone. I just make a wide enough arc and run my ass off.
You don't gotta be clever if you're just that fast.
That's right.
You are running. You are dodging horn burrowers that are leaping from branches and ripping into these tree haunts. You are running at full speed. You see Doug has the book in his talons, and you just like effortlessly get around these things.
The second I see Doug, the bow's back out, and all I'm concerned about is making sure he's got cover. because he's a little weighed down now. He's going to be coming down towards me. If anything goes for Doug, I've got an arrow ready for it.
Yeah, I'm going to say like this, like in that moment, you've got to take a shot at something. So give me a, this is going to be probably still like, I don't think we're actively in combat. So this is still probably facing a danger with, edge because it's precision.
Okay.
And that is an 8 and a 2.
I rolled a 3. I am taking my momentum to protect Doug.
That is a full success. That is a massive success. You pick one of these haunt things, like the tentacle almost grabs Doug. You pick it out of the air.
Slow motion shot. I'm tracking it perfectly. And just as the tentacle goes to close around his tail, you see this slow motion arrow just thunk right in the eye, screaming and rolling, crashing to the ground.
And with that, you slide the book like the, you effort like Doug slides the book into your pouch, into your bag. And you collectively like make your way out of here and back to action.
Doug goes in the bag too. Doug just dives into the bag and pulls the lid down and hides.
A sensible decision. And you make your way back to Ashton. Like you have gotten back to your employer, which means we are going to make two rolls here right now because this was a job which required wealth, which was your fortune teller ability.
Yes. Well, my not fortune teller. It was
or fortune hunter. Fortune.
Yes,
hunter,
that was it.
The first thing we're going to do is fulfill your vow. When you achieve what you believe to be the fulfillment of your vow, roll me 2d10 if you have them in front of you.
Oh, sure. Hang on. I put them away because I didn't think I was going to need them. Okay. 2d10.
You have a progress here of 9.
Okay.
So that is your action score. So I want to know what the challenge dice are for this action.
Okay. A 7 and a 1.
Flawless, a strong hit. Your quest is complete. You gain, because this was a formidable task, you would gain 3. You gain 3 experience.
Cool.
You hand off the 2, 3. Ashton is like waiting, and like shockingly for Ashton, who is usually waiting in like a pretty crowded bar room, Ashton is waiting in a completely empty tavern, holding a glass, looking off in the distance, looking more stressed than you've ever seen him in your life.
When I walk up and I place one red eye, like he had these coins and he would just stamp a red eye in the middle of them. And it was his own personal money. He's like, this is an IOU. It was this fancy IOU, you know, this little fancy token that was like his calling card. I plucked one off him because I knew he would have it. And I just walk up and I wordlessly just place it on the table.
Well, that's disappointing, but does that mean that you've got...
And then I also wordlessly, there's a rummage from within the book and you see Doug's head pop out and he just caw, and then I reach in, grab the book and plant that down as well.
And he like silently looks at it and you see the color return to his face a little bit. You see his posture soften. I can't believe it's here. I can't believe we were able to recover it.
What is this? Because what this has done to the land and to the creatures around that land is a perversion that will live on for many decades.
There are two answers to your question. The answer to the question of what caused this and what has caused, well, the perversion that will live on for decades. Very well put. And he kind of flips to some random pages and tears them out of the journal and like throws them on the ground. And you see that they are magical diagrams, but like not necessarily scrolls or spells, the kind of ritual thing that would take like 15 years to put together.
Right.
Engineering documents, for lack of a better way to put it. That is not why I wanted you to recover this. We can destroy those. We don't need to bring another conduit into the world. It is my estimation that whatever appeared to feast on the energy that Dorm built was ironically the very thing that he was trying to prevent. It's the nature of prophecy. It's how it always goes. What I wanted you to recover, and he flips and quietly sits and you see journal entries, is the last memories of my friend before he disappeared off of this world.
You sent me.
into this place for letters.
Letters, journal entries. I don't have anything else to remember, my friend. I figured if this book survived, sure, we could, you know, if it makes you feel better to take the high-minded thing, we could destroy those pages and prevent such a thing from being created again. But my answer is that now I have a thing to remember the person I used to travel with, the person I used to adventure with, and I have something that I can properly mourn.
I am pleased for you, but you misunderstand me. I am not concerned with these creatures. Terrible things happen all the time. I am concerned with my gold.
Oh.
And this will be the last time you and I engage with each other. Consider this my retirement.
I am sad to lose, two of my best freelancers today, but I'm happy that you are embarking on a new chapter in your life. And he hands over, like he pulls out a bag that is larger than you expected. If I can assist you.
He felt a little guilty.
If I can assist you in starting a new chapter in your life, and he kind of like puts a hand on your shoulder, like hands the bag over to you, it is heavy.
Yeah, that takes Visha kind of aback from it, and he looks at him, because again, like Visha doesn't have friends, but this is the closest thing to a friend, and Visha doesn't really understand boundaries and doesn't read people. So when this gesture was this is the first time Visha's actually gone, oh, wait, maybe this relationship means more than I am aware of. And so he would nod and mm-hmm. he would thank him. And he would say, perhaps I will not go that far. Should you need me, send for a raven.
I swear, every one of you mercenaries is like this. And I cannot, I mean, if it's not a coin, it's the raven. Fine. I will call for a raven if I freelancers, I swear. And like, you can tell he's smiling a little bit as he sinks back in his chair. And you turn around as Doug kind of like gives you a side eye cock of like, does this mean sardines?
This means so many sardines, Doug.
And with that, that is game.
Perfect.
That ruled.
That was great. I like those two.
That was fun.
It's the secret with an asshole character. You can have an asshole character if they got a likable animal.
If they have a likable animal and one friend, then yeah. They can be as much of an asshole as they want.
Absolutely. It's all they need.
That was great. I'm so happy. Let me ask you, how did you enjoy this is my kill every monster follow-up question. How did you enjoy playing in the scenario, the weird environment scenario that Dylan and I cooked up?
It's funny because you're a much more generous DM.
That's fair.
you want your players to win. He never wants me to win. That's kind of the setup for the show, but on a personal level, Dylan does not want me to win.
That is so fair. I'm like, you're right, because I am like, well, I wrote all this stuff. I want you to be able to see it. I don't want to be like, yeah, and then the thing like tramples you to death and guess that's it.
You are properly on the side of the player.
Dylan, I love that whole lot.
And Dylan is too. When Dylan plays games, Dylan is on the side of the player. Dylan's just not on my side.
Sure,
and that
sure,
bleeds
sure.
over into the game.
When you're making the podcast Kill Every Monster, Dylan is not on your side. Dylan is on the monster side and wants to ruin your day as aggressively as possible.
It is funny how much I edit out where Dylan is like, you know, just kill him. You can kill him. Just kill him right now.
That's really funny. Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for playing this with me. This was such a cool two episode experience. And I'm so thrilled with how this turned out.
I can't wait to listen to the whole thing now because I get like the other side of the telephone conversation.
That's what's going to be really great is like that you and Dylan both like get to hear the other thing. Like Dylan's going to get to hear you stumble through the adventure and you're going to get to like hear us piece by piece assemble what is going on. Like I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I get to hear the assembled threat and Dylan gets to get mad that I lived.
Yes. So real quick before we wrap up, where can people find you and your work online?
You can find everything that I make at our new site. I'm sorry. You can find everything that I make at Dead Ghost Productions. So that's deadghostpro.com. And you can see all the things I guest on or create outside of the TTRPG space at my own personal site, aram.gay.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for doing the show. This was an amazing experience. And now I'm going to throw it over to me in the future so that he can wrap things up. Take a future, me. Thanks, Bass Me. And thanks again to Aram for coming on the show. This game was so much fun. Like, this was such a cool experiment to do and crossover to do. And, like, getting to do both halves of it was just, I'm over the moon. This was so cool. I really loved it. Thank you so much for coming and playing with me. Be sure to head to killeverymonster.com. To check out the Kill Every Monster podcast, it's genuinely one of my favorite tabletop RPG podcasts. And be sure to head to deadghostmedia.com to check out all of the other things that Aram and Dylan are working on. And finally, be sure to follow Aram on Twitter, as long as that's still a thing, at Aram Varshian. Then while you're on Twitter, follow us at Party of One Pod. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Party of One Podcast. Find us on TikTok at Party of One Podcast. Find us on Tumblr at Party of One Pod. Subscribe to our newsletter at buttondown.email/Party of One Podcast. And join our Discord community at bit.ly/partyofonediscord. If you enjoy the show, there's a lot of ways to support it. You can support us financially at patreon.com/jeffstormer or ko-fi.com/jeffstormer. You can give us a nice iTunes review, shout us out to a friend, give us some love on social media. You can buy some Party of One merch at bit.ly/partyofonemerch. Or, if you're looking for more great podcast content, you can check out All My Fantasy Children, which is a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast that I make with my best friend in the world, Aaron Catano-Saez. We take a listener-submitted prompt and spin it into an original fantasy character, populating a shared universe one story at a time. You can also check out Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, which is an actual play about a heartless witch, a cozy house, and the many people making their homes inside. Both of those you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Party of One is, as always, produced and edited by Jeff Stormer and Jen Frank. Music for the show comes from the song Infinite Lives by Megaran, featuring the D&D Sluggers, and the Party of One logo is by Evan Rowland. If you'd like to inquire about advertising rates coming onto the show as a guest or about press coverage of the show, you can email me at partyofonepodcast@gmail.com. And unless I am mistaken, that is all we do here. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Remember to fight the forces of fascism every single day. Remember that self-love and self-care are radical and defiant acts of resistance. And as always, party on, everybody.